Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It is time for an All of It watch party pregame. A watch party is when we, Team All of It, that includes you, we watch a show or a movie that has captured the moment, and then we get together and we talk about it on the radio. It's sort of a throwback to those old days when you came into work on Monday morning, you dished about The Sopranos or The Wire or even The Bachelor. This month's watch party is for the HBO series The White Lotus. It's 6 episodes long, and the finale is this Sunday, so you could catch up. The White Lotus takes place at an extremely fancy resort in Hawaii. And in the show, we meet some extraordinarily privileged people who are, well, miserable, and in some cases, miserable humans. Their lives are juxtaposed with the people who work at the resort, like the empathetic spa worker played by Natasha Rothwell, who has her own dreams. Connie Britton and her hair play a Sheryl Sandberg-type tech executive who has one sort of spoiled mean girl child who is very progressive and one tech-addicted son who's kind of sweet. There's a newly married couple, and one of them is really regretting having married the other. And then there is this amazing performance from Jennifer Coolidge as a rich woman who seems to have a lot of needs. Here's a bit of the trailer where the hotel manager, played by Murray Bartlett, explains what the role of the staff is, and a bit of Coolidge making his point.
You have to treat these people like sensitive children.
Big smiles, wave, Lani. Wave like you mean it.
Especially with these VIPs. They want to be the only child. The special, chosen baby child of the hotel. And we are their mummies.
Hello. I brought my mother's ashes with me so I could spread them in the ocean. I'm gonna need a boat.
We have our resort boat you can charter.
Could I get some alcohol on the boat?
Of course. Some fruit and cheese, maybe?
I think I'm gonna be a little emotional. But let's definitely order the cheese.
Some people love the show. The New Yorker called it brilliant, biting satire, but a lot of people can't get past how unlikable some of the characters are. That said, it was announced this week that The White Lotus would be back for a second season. We'll discuss all of it on Monday with a cast member of the show, but to help us pregame for this watch party is one of the hosts of NPR's Pop Culture Happy Hour, Aisha Harris. Hi, Aisha.
Hi, thank you for having me.
So where does The White Lotus fit into the world of prestige cable?
Well, it's interesting because HBO in the last few years has really sort of carved out its own niche for this exact type of satire and observation. And so when you think of this, I feel like it sits very neatly alongside something like Succession, Big Little Lies, The Undoing, which was a miniseries that came out last year and starred Nicole Kidman and Hugh Grant as, you know, more rich people we love to hate. And I think that's really, I feel like that's kind of become HBO's new tagline. It should be, because there's just this fascination with seeing rich people be miserable, be upset, and White Lotus fits perfectly within that genre.
What works about this premise, the idea of we have the lives of the workers at these high-end resorts and the lives of their pampered patrons? Is this kind of an upstairs-downstairs thing?
Yeah, exactly. Like, I definitely got some Parasite vibes from it in a way.
Yeah.
Because you get to see both sides of that. We see, you know, the Armand character who's played by Murray Bartlett, and he is the manager who has to deal with all of these various temperaments and attitudes and prickly responses to anything he does. And that's really interesting to watch. And then, of course, there's also Natasha Rothwell as Belinda, the sort of spa manager. And the way she has to manage Jennifer Coolidge's character is just like, it's so nerve-wracking. But I do think that, like, part of my issue with the show, which I think some of it is really smart and really biting, and I love all the performances, but I do wish that we could have just seen a little bit more of the downstairs within the show. I think that it's still very, very heavily focused on watching all of these wealthy people be terrible and also miserable. And I think it could have benefited a little bit more from a more even balance on that front.
What are the standout performances?
Oh, for me, it's definitely, I think, Natasha Rothwell and Jennifer Coolidge together. Their dynamic, just to watch the way in which they have this dance where the Jennifer Coolidge character is very, very needy and in some ways self-aware, but in other ways not. And when it comes to her not being self-aware about who she is and what she does, it directly affects the Natasha Rothwell character. And to watch Rothwell really play with that, she, you know, a lot of it is just her listening to Jennifer Coolidge's character say a lot of things, but like it's all there in her face and the way in which you can see her have sparks of hope and then sparks of like extreme disappointment. And it's just really, really fascinating to watch those two have that very imbalanced dance.
I feel like Jennifer Coolidge is having another moment. She seems to have one there's sort of waves when there's a lot of really great work from Jennifer Coolidge. She's in Swan Song playing a very different kind of character. When you think about her strength, in this performance, because it could be super broad, but at the same time, you feel bad for this woman, even though she is so needy and such a vampire.
Absolutely. I mean, of the rich characters, I think she's probably the most sympathetic, in part because she is the most self-aware of all the rich characters. You know, she talks about how she seems to understand that she is a mess and that she needs to figure her life out. But she's, you know, even that's like the first step. And then, of course, you actually have to take steps to fix yourself. And she's not quite at that level yet, but it is just really great to see Jennifer Coolidge have this moment. You know, we've loved her in all of these very broad performances, whether it's, you know, something like Legally Blonde or Best in Show, and she's great in those. But I think it's really nice to see a sort of more dramatic side and see a character that really has a really compelling arc throughout all six episodes of this show.
My guest is Ayesha Harris from NPR's Pop Culture Happy Hour. We're talking about The White Lotus. It's our watch party choice this month. We'll talk about it on Monday with one of the cast members from the show. So the show is written by Mike White. And for people who don't know about Mike White, he's sort of an interesting character. How would you describe Mike White's work?
I think White Lotus is very much, you know, his brand. So if you like Mike White, or if you are not even familiar with him, but you've seen some of his other work, something like Beatrice at Dinner, which came out a few years ago, and that starred Selma Hayek, and that was considered sort of one of the earliest responses to the Trump era. Mm-hmm. Of course, he's also, you know, he's done Enlightened. He just has a way with really interesting, biting satire. And so The White Lotus fits really nicely into like his whole oeuvre.
What of the satire do you think is really on point that he really gets to, and what missed the mark a little bit for you?
Well, I think that, you know, the two young daughters, so, you know, Connie Britton's character and Steve Zahn's character, they're the couple, they have two daughters, and they're played by Sydney Sweeney and by Brittany O'Grady. And so those two daughters are in college, they're on this family trip. And I think that seeing the way in which they interact with others, they're, you know, they're early 20s, late teens, they're so over it. They're constantly reading like these different, very high, you know, highfalutin books.
the books are hilarious because they'll be on a beach chair. It's like, is that Camille Paglia? Like one of them's gone.
Yeah. Exactly. Like they're of that age that I remember being, where, you know, you are just having your eyes open to all these different things that you didn't have before. And you know, you're the type who will spout those things out in the world in conversation to try to one up the adults in the room, even if you don't necessarily, you haven't quite been able to connect those things yet to actual understanding in a way. And so I think that the way in which they interact with all the adults, it's just really, really, that's where it's spot on for me. I think when it gets a little bit less compelling, it's just when it gets feels a little bit too much like you're reading directly from a Twitter thread, where it's just, we're going to go back and forth. The Steve Zahn character says things that, I mean, obviously there have been plenty of people who have said these things in real life, but he's just like, well, I'm a white man and I've like, so I should feel guilty for being white. And I'm just like, I get it. We've seen this before. You know, I think that sometimes it can get a little bit too, the satire can feel a little too directly pulled from Twitter. And I'm not sure that necessarily translates into something dramatically interesting.
Now the show, when it first started, it starts and it lets us know there's been a death, but we don't know who. And I guess this weekend we're going to find out. What do you think of this device? I almost forgot about it by the time I got to the end of episode 5, if I'm honest.
Well, it's funny because it definitely feels a little bit like, you know, it had similarities to something like Big Little Lies, where there was like a central death in the middle of that sort of mystery too. But clearly, I think to me at least, the death is not that important. I mean, I did have in the back of my mind the whole time, like, oh, you know, I hope it's one of the characters I don't care about, you know, to have some sort of comeuppance. And I won't spoil it. I've seen all 6 episodes, so I won't spoil it. But I will say, like, in the end, you know, I think that the death is not really that important. It's the journey. And I think that's pretty clear in the way for some people like you, it wasn't even really that, you know, it wasn't really in the back of your mind. It's just kind of there to add another layer of intrigue.
On Monday, we're going to have the actor who plays the sort of moody, awkward teenage gamer son, Fred Hechinger, on the show. And he's like sort of the one person who sort of emotionally develops a little bit in the show. If you could ask him a question, what should I ask him?
Oh, I don't even know. I would say maybe, you know, does he think that his character grows up to be like his parents? Or does he really reject that in adulthood?
Okay, writing this down. Now, thoughts on season 2. They announced it's going to be season 2. It probably won't be in the same. They're going to kind of, the White Lotus is going to, we're going to discover, I think, is a chain of hotels. I think that's the idea. Thoughts on what could improve season 2?
Oh, I mean, like I said, I really think more focus on the staff, the hotel staff, would be my pick. I think, you know, if you've seen the first episode, one of the sort of great plot lines is that there's one brand new employee who is hiding her pregnancy because she's worried that, you know, she won't be able to maintain the job if she has to immediately go on leave. And then, you know, the manager doesn't even notice that she's dealing with all these issues and actually it goes into labor. And so, like, I would have loved to see that character come back in some way. And so seeing more of that, I think, and focusing less on the wealthy folks in their orbit would be how I would hope season 2 would continue.
Aisha Harris is co-host of NPR's Pop Culture Happy Hour. Thank you so much for helping us pregame our watch party with The White Lotus this weekend on HBO. Aisha, thank you.
Thank you. Have fun.
I'm David Remnick, host of The New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.